Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the Playground song goes, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby and the baby carriage, right? But what if you're stuck at finding love and marriage? And even with changing mores, you aren't sure for yourself about single parenthood without a partner. That's what my next guest, Melanie Notkin, calls circumstantial infertility. It's her story and that of many other women she knows. She has found a name for this growing demographic of single professional women, mostly, who didn't necessarily choose to be missing out on motherhood. Her new book is called Otherhood, Modern Women Finding a New Kind of Happiness. And she joins me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And let's start with some statistics. I don't think anyone living in New York City, certainly not in Manhattan, can't think of several women in their 30s and 40s to whom this label won't apply. But what do the numbers show?
A recent Gallup poll that was issued in September said that 90% of Americans are parents or want to be parents. So 50% of women are mothers. 40% want to be mothers, expect to be mothers, or always wanted to be mothers. A small minority, about 5 to 6%, are child-free by choice. So we've got 40% of American women who are not mothers but want to be mothers. And as many of us, mostly college-educated women, the daughters of feminism, expected to have the social, economic, and political equality our mothers didn't have, we also expected to have the husband and kids they did, but we are leaning toward the end of our fertility. And we remain, many of us, single or childless, or we just finally find love, but it may be too late in terms of our fertility.
Is this an urban phenomenon? I would think the suburbs would be particularly difficult for older singles, say middle-aged singles, since many people move there for the schools.
Absolutely. Although those who've started to read Otherhood have been emailing me, tweeting, Facebooking from Iowa, Michigan, I mean, literally from all over the country, that this is their story and finally they're being heard. So while we really do associate this with a cosmopolitan woman, these women are all over America.
And we don't have a word for this group yet, which is part of your point. Childless is rejected because of the implication of lesser and less, while child-free makes it sound like fun, hence your word otherhood?
Correct. I mean, child-free implies those who feel free of children, and for them it is the right choice, and I defend that choice without question.
People who just say, I don't want to have kids.
I don't want to have kids. And now it doesn't mean that they don't love kids and they don't love other people's kids. They may be savvy aunties themselves, but for them it's not the right choice. And yes, childless can make people feel less than, and certainly in America we've got this, what I call a mom-opia, right? A myopic view of all women as mother. And so we begin potentially to feel less than, as if we haven't accomplished a goal. And for many of us, those of us who are part of the otherhood, have always had this very strong existential desire, yearning to be mothers.
You just used the term savvy auntie, and you founded a company called Savvy Auntie, right?
I did. In fact, otherhood came out of a very personal experience for me. In my late 30s, I realized that, I knew that I hadn't yet been married. I'm still not married. And I always yearned for these children. And yet the children in my life were the most important people in my life. And I found that there were no resources for us. And again, going back to those statistics, women are not having children as early and young as we used to, and we are spending a lot of our time and our discretionary income on our nieces and nephews. So that was part of my next step. What would I do? Which is what I want the readers of Otherhood to decide to do, is to make a choice to move forward with their lives, whatever that choice is, keep going.
You say savvy auntie or auntie?
Personally, I'm an auntie, but auntie is fine too. Just, don't call me late for dinner, as they say.
So Melanie Notkin, not late for her segment, talking about circumstantial infertility and her book, Otherhood, Modern Women Finding a New Kind of Happiness. And listeners, is this you? Have you frozen your eggs yet? A question you get too often? Is that a question you get too often? Not for those of you who are child-free and loving it, because it is a liberation for you, nor for those who think having children is immoral, given the number of people on the planet. But if you are single and staring at the end of your fertility, wondering, how did I get here? Call us 212-433-2255. WNYC, or finding your ways to make your peace with that, as a lot of this book is about, and having moved on, 212-433-9692. And for that matter, if you're single and in your 20s, do you think your expectations have changed for what motherhood might require? That's 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If Melanie Notkin's story sounds anything like your story, and if you want to share it or if you want to ask her a question. And Melanie, you reject the idea that you haven't married yet because you're picky or career focused. But based on your chapter, Modern Women, where you and your friends complained about recent dates, maybe you are a little picky and you are a little career minded. So is that a fair point, or is your objection that it's also true of your friends who did marry and have kids?
The number one complaint I got from every woman that I spoke to in research for this book, no matter her race, ethnicity, background, whatever it was that men no longer want to plan the date. And while it's true that we are modern, independent women, we also enjoy old-fashioned romance. And I think that we need a remix today, that we all sort of got confused about what dating meant and what our roles meant. Gender equality didn't mean gender sameness. And I like men, and I like to be a woman, and women like to be women. And we want to lean back when it comes to dating, and we want men to lean into dating. And if we can really think about how to go back to a little bit of those traditions, which doesn't mean that we are less than, it doesn't mean that we're vulnerable, naive, or weak. It just means that sometimes with all the nurturing that we do every day with our parents, our nieces and nephews, our friends who are often our family, our coworkers above us and below us, and our pets and everybody around us, when it comes to romance, we want a man who's going to make a plan for the date. And I just have to say about this career woman thing, you know, there are no career men. Calling a woman a career woman implies that she's made a choice. She's chosen to pay the rent over finding love, marriage, and children. But of course, every woman has to work. In fact, there are many very powerful working moms out there, married moms out there who work. So this is anachronistic of the 1960s when women who worked were outliers. That's not today.
I always ask when it comes to politicians and the male politician happens to have young children, why aren't we asking how he's going to handle parenthood and the big executive job when the question always comes up with respect to women politicians?
Absolutely. And for the single woman, we'll get, well, you know, you're married to your career. I can promise you, I am not married to my career. My career is lovely. I'm very passionate about it. But that's not the type of intimacy that I'm looking for or that most women are looking for.
But you really think a big problem that's standing in the way of you and other women in your group not having found that man is because they don't want to plan the dates? They don't want to hang on to the certain old-fashioned notions of a man's role while giving up some of the others?
You know, it's less about the formality of a rule of, you know, if he doesn't plan the date, I'm not going to fall in love with him. It's just what we find attractive. You know, there is something about, intimacy in dating. And in fact, the men that I've dated and the women I spoke to dated, when they do take charge of the date, when they are much more direct, we like men who are decisive. We like men who are thoughtful, and we like men who are fun. When they have all those things, and they're vulnerable, it's easier to fall in love. This is what this is about. We all want to fall in love. And frankly, for men, too, you know, they want women who won't be very aggressive when it comes to dating and make all the plans. And, you know, I know that there may be some listeners who get may get upset about this. But the truth is that it's OK to be the authentic to who you are. And if you are the type of woman who likes to dress in a dress and curl her hair and put makeup on and go on a date, enjoy being on a date with a man who enjoys going on a date with a woman who enjoys being a girly girl, a girly woman, then great. I think that's great. So, yeah, I think that we need to rethink how we date.
All right, listeners, is this ringing true to you? One, that the reason more couples aren't getting together is that women want men to make more of the plans, take more of the lead, do more of the leaning in the dating situation, and men don't want women to do that because they would see the women as too aggressive. And yet at the same time, even though those sound like compatible desires, there's too many disconnects out there. And more broadly, do you feel that you are one of the women with circumstantial infertility, her term, in the book Otherhood, Modern Women Finding a New Kind of Happiness? As we take your calls now for Melanie Notkin and Lynn in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, this is wonderful. I'm glad you're talking about this. So I have a slightly different perspective. I am now past my, I'm in my 60s, past my fertility age, I hope. and I was the type of person, I was in school for years and then ran my own, and still running my own business, which is 10-hour days of work, and I go home to bed. So it's not that I have been avoiding this. I always wanted to have a family and children, but I was raised to always have a family situation, not to have children out of wedlock, which I suspect a lot of women, at least in my generation, also feel the same way. I was a daddy's girl, so there's no way I was going to have a child out of wedlock and not have a father for that child. So my life has just been, I have not been around men because I run my own small business. And many of my friends who worked for corporations, they were able to meet men in the workplace or through people in the workplace. So it's much easier for them to socialize and find a man without having to go to a party or after work bar. I had no time for any of that. So it was my circumstance, and I'm sure with some women who are listening, I just didn't have time to find them. Actually, now that I'm near retirement age, I've actually found someone.
Nice.
And maybe getting married at my young senior age. But I take great joy in my nieces, who I'm very close with. I have three wonderful nieces, and two of them now are married with children, and I'm very close with them. So,
and it sounds like you knew your priorities. You were making the choices consciously that you were making, and you made your peace with it along the way.
I have, and what I'm here to tell women is it's a wonderful life, and even if I don't personally have children, I can enjoy my nieces and their children and the man that now I plan on marrying.
Savvy.
Who happens to be 16 years younger than me.
How about that?
Good for you.
Lynn, that's great. Savvy Auntie Lynn from Fort Lee.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Emily in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I wanted to say, I mean, I've been feeling kind of left out of this conversation because I'm in my early 30s and I really want children but don't have them. But the barrier for me is primarily financial. My career just kind of got derailed after I got out of school. I haven't been able to find good work. You know, a lot of my friends would really like to have children, but it's just not financially possible because we're at poverty level incomes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Are you married or single?
I actually was married, but then we split up because he got a job across the country and I couldn't move.
So, again, you know, that's the circumstantial infertility is about the pain and grief of the single woman or a woman of different circumstances who's unable to have children. And often that grief goes unacknowledged by society, certainly in general, and even those who are close with her. It's as if only couples who are together and trying, who have a biological issue with fertility, who get any sympathy, and even then, they may not get sympathy. But yes, absolutely, it can be devastating when your circumstances prove to be the issue, and not your biology.
Right.
Can be devastating.
But I think what Emily's bringing into the conversation that's different than where we were before is money.
Yeah, well, money is the circumstance here, and certainly, you know, there are people and research shows that lately, especially because of the more recent recession, people have had fewer children. So even if they have children, they have fewer children. But, you know, women who, generally speaking, are college educated, they tend to wait longer before they marry, and they tend to want to be married and or in a cohabitated union before having children. For them, it's not necessarily a financial issue, although certainly for younger women, it can be the financial issue because they haven't gotten there in their career, and for some, many, the recession sort of pulled them back and pulled their spouse back.
Emily, have you figured out for yourself how much money you would have to make in order to feel comfortable having children, even perhaps on your own if that was your choice, or how much money you would – or how much money defines what you're looking for or is a necessary requirement, let's say, in what you're looking for another potential husband?
Well, that's part of the problem. It's been hard for me to prioritize money when I'm looking for a partner. And I meet guys who are artists. I fall in love with guys who are perpetual grad students. And, you know, I kind of tried for a while to make that a priority, but it just wasn't something I could do. I mean, I'm talking about poverty level incomes. Like, I think I could raise a kid on $20,000 or $30,000. Like, I've been making, you know, 12, 13 the last couple years.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, I feel sometimes like I read these articles about women who, you know, having it all and wanting kids. I feel like I've gotten nothing. I haven't got the career. I haven't got the apartment. I haven't got the social life.
And you're drawn to these, you know, low-wage creative types.
Yep, of course.
Because they're so interesting.
But, you know, at the same time, like, I don't want to feel like my only option to have children is to marry for money.
Yeah.
Well, and frankly, you know, most women don't want to marry for money. Most women want love and won't settle for a lesser love. And, you know, you are fortunate in that you're young. What's important for you to do is to keep healthy, to make sure that you preserve your fertility that as long as you can. And to, you know, you have to do the things that you need to do in order to progress with your life. I mean, women of the other herd are persevere. We are not women who wait for life to happen to us. We move ahead and make life happen. We're not waiting for the man. And, you know, we are waiting for the man, excuse me. But in the meantime, we're making life happen. And that's what's important. So my greatest suggestion to you would be to keep moving forward and choose one main goal and focus on that. And if you think it's to get yourself on financially secure, then you go do that. That should be your priority. And then everything else, when you're living life to your potential, everything else seems to fall in place.
Emily, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. I know that other people resonated with that for sure and that you helped some folks out there. Melanie, single motherhood isn't as stigmatized as it was probably when you were growing up. So why is that not your advice to women in your situation?
First of all, I don't give advice at all in otherhood. It's certainly not for me to judge, to advise what choices women should make, and women make the right choices for them. The truth is that most women choose not to be single mothers, even at late fertile age. In fact, those who do would have preferred to have found love, marriage, and children beforehand. In fact, like I said before, college-educated women tend to wait for marriage or cohabitate a union before having children. It happens that for me, it's not the right choice. And for many women, it's not the right choice. And it doesn't mean that it's not because we don't want children. And in fact, sometimes people will say, well, if you really wanted children, if that was really important to you, you'd go out and do that. But, you know, we have other issues that surround us that may not be help us have those children on our own
or
it's not part of the dream.
Children,
right?
That much that you want to do it in that difficult a circumstance.
Or we may want children that much, but we also want it in the context of love and marriage. And that's okay. It doesn't mean that you're less than for not becoming a mother, no matter how deeply you yearn to be a mother. It's completely authentic.
Marie in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Brian. Thank you so much. And my story's typical. Pretty typical. I live in a Haitian community as far as my church, and that's new for me over the last year and a half. And what I've found is to be 48, unmarried, well, I'm divorced for 17 years now, and not have any children, you're kind of looked upon as a pariah. You're defected. What is wrong with you? People constantly saying, I'm going to pray for you that you find the right man, and, you know, God sent someone into your life, and 48 is certainly not too old to have a baby. Sarah had a baby at 90-something years old, so it's there for you, for them, for that community, to be educated, to have your own home and have your own money is not what, that's not their litmus test for success as a woman, you first have to be a mother. You first have to be married. The others come, that's great. But to be a woman means to be a mother and a wife. And it constantly really drags me down.
Melanie, I see you smiling, the smile of recognition.
Absolutely.
And you disclose your age in the book. You're 44, right?
I'm 44. And, you are a typical woman of the otherhood. I mean, I think you're going to laugh out loud at a lot of the chapters in the book, because the book actually is really funny. We're talking about a serious issue and things like circumstantial infertility, but there are a lot of laugh out loud moments here because we all experience these awkward moments and also this judgment from other people of our life must be lesser than, and we pray for you. And by the way, they say, it's not too late to have kids. Well, you know, the truth is, like, it's great to have all this technology that enables women to have children later in life. It's wonderful. It's miraculous. But it doesn't enable us to move on. Some of us just want to say, you know what, it didn't happen. Now I move on. I have a beautiful, exquisite, magnificent life of other things, which you seem to have. And you're right that we seem to measure success based on others. And what we need to do is not to measure our success based on other people's milestones. That's not productive. You have to base your life success and your happiness on your authentic self. So if you think of yourself as other to mother, and if you think of yourself as one who is less than to mother and to certainly to married mother, then you will never live your authentic life. You'll never find happiness. So really the mission of the book Otherhood is to make sure that people understand that they are not alone, to make them understand this is a very universal issue. It's a growing issue, especially among well-educated women who are independently financially secure. But it's also an opportunity for us to take another look at ourselves independently, live our authentic lives, and as a cohort, live our authentic life.
And the information is out there for us to make that decision that the longer you wait, the higher the chances of Down syndrome or not finding the right mate, especially as an African-American woman. All of that information is available, but with my upbringing, I chose not to have children out of wedlock. And as time progressed, I had to come to the realization it may not happen. And when you pass that 40 mark, to me, that was it. 40 was it. And I said, okay, I have to be okay with it.
Yes.
Either I am okay with it. However, externally, other people are constantly reminding me,
yes,
you're a pretty girl. You're educated. What's wrong?
They mean well. They mean well, and they really want what's best for you. But the problem is that it's a lot of noise going on around you, and you need to focus on you and your happiness and living your authentic life. And to me, it sounds like you're doing great. You own your own home. You have a great profession. You sound very secure. And got, you know, I would just keep moving forward and don't listen to anybody else. Keep living your authentic life.
A lot of noise. You say
a lot
it's
of noise.
About them. It's not about her.
Exactly. It's about them. Just don't listen. Put your earphones on and move forward.
Marie, best of luck. And let's get a male into this conversation.
Great.
For the first time on the phone, Stuart in Bloomfield. You're on WNYC. Hi, Stuart.
Good morning. Hello. I would like to give the male perspective on this. I'm a graphic artist. Lived in New York my whole life, born in Brooklyn. You always think you have enough time to find somebody. If you hold out for true love, usually the people that have big hearts are the ones that fall very hard. And if it goes wrong, they might not be with somebody for a while until they meet somebody again. And, you know, for me, that's the way it's been. I was never somebody who went out and dated like a serial dater. I was always really shy around women. You know, I could be definitely flirty, but I mean, it's kind of hard sometimes to go from relationship to relationship with these long spans. And then you realize all of a sudden that you're, you know, when you're over 38, let's say, as a male, you're looked at as well as a freak, that you're not married, mm-hmm, and you don't have children. And, we, you know, as being a graphic artist, I rose to the top of my ranks in photographic editing. And what's happened is they've taken the economy and they've figured out how to outsource every job they possibly can. So, like one of the previous callers, I think she was from Edgewater or Fort Lee. What happens is some years you're making poverty wages. Now, and at one time I was making $89,000, my best year, 2004. And, you know, I found this out by looking at the Social Security website, too, and it shocked me, like, how the economy has really had a big factor in this. But the point is, you think you always have the time, and, you know, you're stigmatized, and the mm-hmm. economy has a big hand in it. And is it, you know, even if you do find somebody later on, I'm 46 now, is it fair to the child that I'm, you know, I don't have the same capacity as I did as a younger man? To keep up with a child and to run and to play. And sometimes I don't feel like getting out of the house, especially yeah. with the economy. And that's sure. not fair to the kid either.
Yeah.
So you say the otherhood, but I'm telling you from the brotherhood, it's
gotcha.
Very hard. You know, you're
so Melanie, are there is there a brotherhood yeah. that's part of the otherhood?
There is, in fact, and in otherhood, I did speak to some men, and it's amazing. You know, just like women are stigmatized as career women, as if they're cold hearted and choose only their career, not love, marriage, and children. Men are called players, and I think that you were hinting at that. The men, you know, just want to go after woman after woman after woman, and the truth is that men, especially men over 35, they want real relationships. They understand that when you have a connection with a woman, those relationships are deeper, and those relationships are longer, and they're the ones that are much more rewarding. So I totally I hear you 100%, and I love men, and men are really put down, I think, sometimes in society as not being serious. Now, you know, the problem, I think, for some women is that men may mature a little bit later and have less of an issue with their biological clock. When women hit 35 to 40, I call it this Bermuda Triangle of dating, when men don't want to date women of that age, and men have their own issues. So, you know, clearly, again, financially, those issues are there. But the truth is, it doesn't sound like you have a problem falling in love. And love, while it may not solve your financial issues, it seems to be something that you take very seriously. And I have no question that a woman who hears that, if you are vulnerable with her and you share that with her and you are real and authentic with her, I think you'll probably find love in no time flat.
Stuart, thank you for contributing. And we're just about out of time. I'll just tell you that this conversation is going on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Brian Lehrer WNYC. Lisa posts there, this issue is so important in a society so parent-centric, we are too often alienated, isolated, and ostracized, those yes. of us in our 40s and 50s who are childless by circumstance. And Norma writes, I found love several times, but marriage was not for me. Without marriage, I felt that having kids was not a reasonable choice for me.
Yes.
So go
we
on
hear that a lot.
To our webpage or a Facebook page, and we will have to leave it there with our guest, Melanie Notkin, who will be signing her book, Otherhood, Modern Women Finding a New Kind of Happiness, at the Upper East Side Barnes & Noble. That's on March 26th. So make a note of that if you want to meet Melanie, March 26th at the Upper East Side Barnes & Noble for Otherhood. Thank you so much for this important conversation.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you. This was great.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, how some airlines are making flying even more annoying, with United's crackdown on carry-on luggage, for example, and Delta's change in the miles program so that it's not based on miles. Stay with us.